One of the things that I've seen happen that makes a very good sense to me, some people were reading my stuff and I never thought about this. They said, we're not going to write to Congress anymore. That's futile. Congress is, the American government's bought and traded like a franchise operation of private corporations. So they started publishing the lists of the CEOs of the offending companies with their email addresses, and they said, we're just going straight to the CEOs of the corporations. That's interesting. When you go to Lockheed Martin, when you go to DynCorp, which I didn't even talk about DynCorp tonight, when you start going to Halliburton, when you go to ExxonMobil, when you go to Shell, and when you treat Congress as if they are irrelevant, that does a couple of things. First of all, congressmen have big egos. They like to think they're relevant. Hey, wait for me. I'm leading you. Okay? But you might start to point the light where it really fits on the major banks and on the major corporations and the oil companies. I don't know all the answers. All I know is since 1996, I've done lots of citizens' commissions and lots of demonstrations, and I haven't seen, it's just gotten worse. So we have to get creative. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, I would like to say in relation to that, and something you said about it's going to take a big march, like the March on Washington. I was there in 69, 68, I guess it was. But there were tons of little marches for years before that, mm-hmm. before we got that big one. Mm-hmm. So don't give up.
You know,
it takes a lot of little ones to get everybody out. But
there was a fire. May I interrupt you for 1 second? You know, I was on the other side then. You know, I was the only living Republican on the UCLA campus from 1960. No, actually, there were two of us from 69 to 73. Craig Fuller, the other one, went on to become George Bush's chief of staff, and he was my closest friend. But what was alive then, and that's why I always wear my UCLA ring wherever I go. I was there from 69 to 73. I was there during Kent State. I was there during the great demonstrations. And what there was a fire in people's belly. There was a commitment that did not go away. There was a gleam, and I didn't understand it then, but I did understand. I saw it then. And we need something that's an order of magnitude beyond that. And I guess how do we build that kind of fire in people's bellies, that kind of dedication that would have taken Russell Means to Wounded Knee, that would have taken Leonard Peltier to Wounded Knee, that would have taken the Panthers where they went. You know, the U.S. government was scared to death. And let me just add parenthetically, you were there. U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals, Hobbs versus Wilson, 1984. In an appellate court decision, it was disclosed that from top secret documents that the highest priority of the FBI during the 60s and 70s was to prevent any alliance between blacks and whites. They had no higher priority. Okay, so we have been pitted against each other by race, sex, age, sexual preference, you name it, and we have to overcome that stuff real quickly, too.
The question I wanted to ask, and this is hazy, I do not remember names and stuff, but I know there was a man that was chosen by the warlords, the northern warlords, I think, to be the leader,
mm-hmm.
and he died, I think, in the uprising.
Right. He was assassinated.
Yes. I wonder, and then, yeah, okay, that's what I'm asking. Do you have any more facts on that? Because I saw that and I said, aha, but...
Hamid Karzai was UNICAL's man from start to finish. The other guy was more closely allied with Northern Alliance and other factions that were less controllable, and he was probably a pretty honest man, but Hamid Karzai was the shoe-in because that's who UNICAL wanted, period. Hi.
I have a question about the Rockefellers of Standard Oil. And what I've been reading is that David Rockefeller of Chase Manhattan Bank conceived of the World Trade Center, and his brother Nelson Rockefeller was the governor at the time who helped it be realized. And the Port Authority was in control of the towers until 7 weeks before the attack, when it was turned over in a 99-year lease to the second wealthiest Australian. So how did the Rockefellers profit from the World Trade Center, and how did it benefit them turning it over?
I don't know specifically in terms of the real estate deal. It's all very murky. It's been very suspicious. There was a, what was his name, Silverstein or something, who bought it, took the lease right before. But it was heavily insured. I think American International Group and a couple of the reinsurance companies carried the insurance. So he didn't lose any money. So in itself, I think that it's probably less important to know the answer to that question, and here's why. the World Trade Center itself was a small price to pay when it came to global domination and the pretext to control the last remaining oil reserves in the world before we crossed over the Hubble curve into the age of chaos that's certain to follow, you know, and all of that. It was probably a small price to pay for them, and I'm sure that they've covered their bases in some way or another, but I have no further information. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. You've made a couple references to the Black Panthers.
Yes.
I assume that you're serious about that. What is specifically in your mind that you see that we could follow of their tenets?
Well, I've met a few members of the BPP. When Daryl and I lectured, we traveled with Daruba bin Wahad, who had served 20-some years in prison for a murder he did not commit. And I've learned greatly from the dedication of the Black Panther Party. And as a matter of fact, maybe I need to learn more, because they did a lot of community work. They fed the children. They established their credibility not only by a fierce loyalty to the neighborhoods where they live, which has a strong economic clout. By the way, there was a policy issued after the Kerner Commission report, after the Detroit riots, it was a written policy that said no more than one quarter of the population of any inner city should be of the same ethnic makeup. They call it spatial deconcentration. That sounds very Nazi-like. But the Panthers had very strict organizational teaching skills, and they were very well organized, and they were very effective. That's why they had to be so vilified and so infiltrated by the CIA and the FBI both. And maybe we all need to take a lesson and go back and look, because you can measure their effectiveness by how seriously they were targeted.
The government is stonewalling, and the media is refusing to cover a phenomenon that many people have been researching, and a lot can be seen on the internet and nowhere else, apparently. This goes by the name of chemtrails. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I've heard a lot about chemtrails. I know that there is some really devious, dastardly, stinky, rotten, no good, and mean purpose behind them, although I have not seen any completely convincing, credible scientific analysis yet of their contents.
I have seen a lot of speculation.
I haven't seen any hard proof yet. So I've heard some credible stories that there might be estrogen in there, which tends to pacify a populace. I've heard some others that there might be some inoculatory powers in there. There might be some disease. I don't know yet, but there's something there.
Do you have any suggestions on how we could bring about a disclosure of at least the fact it is occurring?
Well, Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, the independent congressman, who's one of my subscribers from the wilderness, just tried to pass an act just started sponsoring an act about space war and chemtrails and all that, and it's been totally watered down already.
Well, they deleted the chemtrails aspect of it before we even got there.
Yeah.
The satellite photographs or satellite images that can be the archived sites particularly, I've been monitoring for months, and it's just absolutely blatant. A lot of it, most people aren't even aware that this is going on, I'm thinking.
Well, it's going on. And that's another thing that where I go with my particular mission, if you will, which is my task is to teach and to My feeling is this. My job, or what I think is most important, is to destroy the credibility of the current government and the people's belief in the current economic system, so that all of you wonderful people and all the people with ideas about renewable energy sources and alternative energy sources, even if we started tomorrow, we could not convert in time to avoid the crunch going over the curve. Okay, it's impossible that they've forestalled it that long. Is to destroy the legitimacy of the government to offset its timetable to make it stumble. Then there's all kinds of things that can come to the surface that I hope to God I'm not responsible for doing. But by talking about chemtrails to people who don't want to hear about it, they don't feel anywhere near as threatened when I say, look at what's happened to your Bill of Rights. Look at how they lied to you about September the 11th. That's resonating in the general public in ways that I hadn't expected. So that's what I'm going to continue to do. Yes, sir.
Besides the knee-jerk reactions that we always get from the left, hey, let's have a rally, let's go march on Washington,
right.
It seems to me that actually the solution is right in front of our nose. as Brzezinski says, all of this has to do with power and wielding power.
Right.
And in order to be able to have power nowadays, you have to be able to control the non-renewable and renewable sources of energy.
Correct.
It so happens that every single one of us is addicted to non-renewable sources of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to be able to combat these bastards at their own game is to take away their power, which is not to be addicted to non-renewable sources of energy. And the way to do that is obviously research. And if people are interested, they could go to a website called disclosureproject.org, and they could find out about it, how to wean themselves off of this. Because once you do that, the only other problem you have to deal with in the world is the cocaine and drug trade, which is the other part of the Hydra that we have to deal with.
Well, there's many parts of it, and I think that's a good start. I don't know that we can break the back of the major oil companies in a short period of time, but I think it's a very good idea to start with that. I mean, you know, there are little things we can do and big things we can do, and I don't know what the outcome is going to be, you know.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just last night, I was at a four-class event on the kinds of issues that we're talking about tonight. And one of the things that we thought to do would be to have a funeral procession for the Bill of Rights in Santa Rosa. So
that's cute. I like that.
That's an example of we thought we got to do fun things and get at people's attention.
Yes.
And so there are a lot of different possibilities. But I wanted to address one other question, and that is we talk about the corporations as being the big evil problem here, but the other issue is the military itself, which mm-hmm. there's the government and how things are run is just embedded with this unelected bureaucrats who are basically driving policy.
Mm-hmm.
And who do you write to there? Who do you, expose?
Well, don't write to the military. I can guarantee you, if you weren't getting anything from Congress.
Well, I'm just asking that as a rhetorical question, that it's not enough to deal with just the corporations. We have this whole, really, it looks like a bunch of people who are incredibly destructive, really don't care, and
some of them do. You would be surprised. Some of them do. But what they also need to see is alternatives. The military has become, it's the same thing with LAPD. One of the hardest things for me to do, actually it was the easiest thing, but for most policemen, you give up your pension, your medical insurance, your benefits, you give up all of those goodies that you get from being a warrior, okay? And the military treats its people the same way. You have to let them see alternatives. Some military guys are beginning to ask some questions. I know because I'm getting some emails.
Hmm.
I don't know how you reach them. But I know that they watch TV, they read, they ask questions, and they listen to their families here at home. I mean, isn't it interesting that there's a group of Israeli officers now refusing to go into the occupied territories?
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Yeah. I'm right in front of you.
I'm staring. Mike, what you were just talking about allows me to segue into what I was thinking about. The military and these other agencies, be they the Pentagon, the CIA, the alphabet agencies that have been abusing their power for so many years, within the ranks of them and within the ranks of them that are below the generals, the CEOs, et cetera, mm-hmm. the directors, are there not really Constitution-believing Americans?
Yes.
And could we not, with the Internet, somehow find hackers so specialized, you see what they've done already, why can't we get your signal into all those people at one time on one day so that there's no possibility for them to watch anything else on television or the Internet but your signal, your Portland video? Thank you, my friend.
Ooh. Well, thank you for saying that. Now, let me tell you the second question that I'm asked more often than any other question, which is, Mike, why are you still alive? Okay? And the answer is, I'll give you several answers very quickly. I was shot at in 1977 and again in 1980. Both missed. I had a number of death threats, but I reached a point after 6, 7, 8 years of being homeless, being denied employment, being called crazy, being shunned, and having been shot at, having been betrayed by my fiance, who I loved dearly, and I left her because of the drug dealing, and been betrayed by my police department, my tape recorded death threat. I asked our chief, Daryl Gates, for help. I sent it through an aide, and the message I got back was, the chief's busy. He can give you 5 or 10 minutes in a week to 10 days if you're still alive. Would you like to make an appointment? That's when I resigned. And I crossed a point that I had seen many times in the area of Los Angeles where I worked, called the jungle, where you saw black men who had served so much time in prison who had no other alternatives, and you saw the look in their eyes, and they said, go ahead, shoot me. Go ahead. What you going to do to me? And I understood that look, and I crossed that line a long time ago. There's nothing else they can do to me. Also, I will not die 1 minute before God has decided. It's not my choice. If you lose the fear, and again, that goes back to this being a spiritual issue more than anything else, all fear is a denial of God. Period. And human fear is healthy, but we must learn to walk toward our fears rather than away from them. And I don't know what asked the question. Forgive me, I'm tired, but I went there, and what happened, and what am I supposed to do next? Sorry, I'm tired. Yes.
Well, I don't know if you really would know about this, but recently, I guess I was on this discussion board with some people who are like Bush supporters, and they were saying, oh, America's not a democracy, it's a republic, meaning because it's not like ancient Athens where people vote directly on every issue, they elect representatives. But they were all saying like that they were against the idea of democracy because it just means majority rule and that's bad. And this is the first time in my life I've ever heard that. I always heard that America was a democracy.
America's an empire, period. Or a fascist dictatorship. The F word, yes.
I wanted to call people's attention to the book Doing Democracy that's on sale up there and in the back.
Okay.
It's a step-by-step guide to how we build popular movements. And it's a lot more than just big demonstrations.
Yeah. And I have to plead ignorance, that I am not an expert on how to build, organize popular mass movements. And so there's a lot of people who know. Somebody who I learned a lot from was a lawyer, Katya Komisaruk, who was very active in the anti-globalist demonstration. She's a brilliant lawyer. I had worked with her on some suits that we had against the CIA that they absolutely destroyed. I won't go into that. But what I thought that's missing, and this raises a very good point, is after September the 11th, what happened to all the anti-globalist demonstrators? Where did they go? What happened? But this is like kicked globalization into afterburner. And they've all disappeared. But one of the things that I thought was so beautiful, and it kind of epitomizes maybe what some of the struggle is about, is that the Bushes and the Brzezinskis and the Rockefellers and the Cheneys are all top-down Roman authoritarian organizational people. And what was so beautiful about the demonstrations that we saw from Seattle to Quebec City was that they were leaderless. You know, they were without a top-down structure, and they behaved organically, and it was beautiful. And I'm not an expert on that, but we need to learn from that. And that's maybe where the old-timers, the BPP guys and everybody else from the 60s and 70s ought to dust off Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Buffalo Springfield, and, you know, bring some of their teachings back to us again. But thank you. Yes.
I think that is going forward. We may not like Khomeini, but there was a revolution in Iran against the Shah.
Yes.
And
which the U.S. was really supporting, by the way.
At a certain point, massive numbers of people in Iran put on their burial clothes and went into the streets. Mm-hmm. And they knew that they were going to be confronting troops with machine guns.
Yep.
So on the one hand, there was the determination of people not to take it anymore. On the other hand, there were some officers who made the decision and some, you know, enlisted people just spontaneously. They just said, we're not going to shoot our people anymore.
That's right.
I'm wondering what indication we have of constitutionalist elements within the armed forces, all the way up to the top, who might say, you know, no farther.
Well, there again, Mao Zedong said revolution is not a dinner party. And what's very clear to me is that there are some, I know because I have been contacted by some, but I will not discuss that any further in this room under these circumstances. They're taking their lives in their own hands. I don't know how many they are. I don't know what the threshold point is. That is the great gamble of a life that must be lived on faith and ethics and principle, is the willingness to act based upon principle without knowing the outcome. And until that becomes the primary motivating force of the human race, we're not going to grow up. And they probably, the rest of the universe won't let us off the planet. Probably. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.